This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code CAMPFIRE when you check out. Again, that special code to get $5 off your first purchase, CAMPFIRE, when you check out. Thanks, Harry's.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. Boy, we are having a busy time here at the Spooky Studio. A lot of exciting things going on, and so glad you decided to tune in a little bit. We'll fill you in a little bit of what's going on, and then we'll get to some great campfire stories. Number one, our virtual campfire Facebook group, it is a hit. In a little over a week, we have almost 1,600 members in that group. I am blown away by the reception. I'm blown away by the stories you'll find over there and the stories that people are sharing. So go over to Facebook and look up Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire. Become a part of the fun. And also, please share your story there. But don't forget, also share it here on the campfire by going over to jimharold.com/campfire. Number two, my new book, Jim Harold's Campfire, will be out, I would say, let's say by the 17th or 18th of September, maybe even a little bit sooner. So I'm very excited about that. In another week or so, you should be able to pick that up. And really excited, 70 spooky stories. I think it's going to turn out to be my longest book ever. And I think that you will enjoy it if you've enjoyed the other campfire books. And then finally, just today, I received in the mail my first t-shirts. Now, for those of you following me on the Facebook group, I've been sharing some images and got those. They look great. We're going to add a few more designs and a few more things before we launch the capability to buy those campfire t-shirts, but look for those. The preliminary reviews have been very good, and I just personally got a hold of the merchandise today, and I'm very satisfied with the quality and wanted to make sure that we did it the right way and to give you a product that you'd be proud to wear, and we'd be proud for you to wear it. So look for that. That's going to be something coming up in the next couple of weeks. So lots of fun on the run-up to Halloween. It's always a busy time. I'm going to be on Coast to Coast AM in about a week and a half, so I'm excited about that. So everything's turning up roses, but a lot of work too, but I love it. And I love these campfire stories that we're about ready to share with you. And here they are, some great campfire stories. Next up on the program is Becky from London. Now, a little bit of background. She's been listening for about 6 months. But Becky actually has been listening, didn't come on the show yet, but went over to our new Facebook group, which is Going Great Guns. As I mentioned before, in a week, we've gotten 1,400 people. It's probably going to be more by the time you hear this. And a lot of people have been sharing stories, so I encourage you to go over there, as I said earlier, and join the group and share your story. But I noticed Becky shared her story, and there's a lot more people I want to get to on there who have shared their story who haven't been on the program and said, hey, why don't you share it on a program too? And Becky was kind enough to do that. So anybody who's already gone over and shared their story, thank you, thank you, thank you. But also, don't forget the show itself, jimharold.com/campfire, to sign up and tell your story. Please share it in both places. That would be great. Becky has for us one of our favorites, a Ouija board story. Becky, welcome to the program and tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. Okay, cool. This is very exciting. Congrats on the show, by the way, and the Facebook page.
Oh, thank you.
So, awesome. So when I was 17, I was basically invited into this school exchange trip with an American school. And it was the kind of thing where I spent a week living with an American girl, and then she came over to live with me in the UK for a week. And before she came to me, she asked if I wanted anything from the US. And I was kind of an X-Files nut at the time, completely obsessed with everything paranormal, especially mm-hmm. David Duchovny. and right, who isn't? And I asked her if she could bring me a Ouija board because you couldn't get them in the UK because they were sort of a black magic thing. But I knew that in the US you could get them at Toys R Us, which was a little bit mad. So she brought one over, and a bunch of us on the exchange, there was probably about 10 of us, we took to gathering at one girl's house in her summer house, and we started playing on this. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of fun because no one in Britain at the time, none of my friends at least, had ever really played on one. And it didn't work. Jim, it didn't work. And we were really annoyed with it. And then this other girl, Kelly, came in mm-hmm. and put her fingers on it. And she was like, come on, guys, this has to work. And it was so weird because it started moving. We asked, is anyone there? And it started moving. So instantly we're all like, okay, there's something here, right?
Right.
And right. So Kelly and I started asking questions, you know, who's there? Has anyone got a message for us? And the first spirit that we got was a child, and he would only call himself X. And we could tell he was a child. Well, he said he was 4, but he kind of had this presence, and it was really weird because it suddenly kind of filled the room that we were in. And but we could tell he was a kid because we asked how he died, and he spelled out the color, and he spelled out water. And then we asked what kind of hair he had, and he spelled out blue. Mm-hmm. But he would spell everything wrong, you know. So it was obvious that he drowned and he didn't have blue hair, but he had this really childish feeling about him, and we could almost sort of sense him laughing. Anyway, there were loads of weird encounters. The cat stopped coming into the room whenever we were using the board, and also it would only ever work when me and Kelly had our fingers on the pointer. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so because of this, everyone said that we were pushing the pointer, you know, right. You're making it up, and, you know, we're 17 and we're sort of like, no, we're not. But so we'd forget about it, you know, for a couple of hours or whatever at a time, because we did this every night. And eventually one night we had this guy come on, and he called himself Edward Beck. And again, it was me and Kelly. And it was really weird because this guy had a completely different energy about him, and he moved the pointer so fast, Jim, it was so weird. It was almost like you talk about possession and stuff, but he was literally moving this thing so fast that we sometimes couldn't track what he was saying. We had to have someone sitting down with a pen and pencil to write down what he was saying. Yeah, he was spelling out things so accurately and so fast. Anyway, people were still saying that we were pushing it. But anyway, I thought Kelly was, and she thought I was, but we definitely weren't. He would tell us details. He told us his name was Edward Beck. He was 68. He was born in Arizona, and he died in a fire. He said he had a wife called Mary and a son called John. And he would even say that he would go and check up on John every now and then. And we asked for John's last name, but he would never give it to us. But he had a real sense of humor. And for example, like when we were making jokes amongst ourselves, he would start moving the pointer from H to A really quickly, H-A, 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 like he was laughing.
Right.
But this was before mobile phones, so we would never have thought to do that. We weren't used to typing those things at this point. This was probably about 1996, right? Okay. So this was a really long time ago. I'm showing my age here. But anyway, he started saying things that as 17-year-olds we never would have known. We would ask him, what about God and religion and where do you go when you die? And he would spell things like, religion is the ultimate paradox. And we didn't even know what the word paradox meant at this time, like not in its right. full complexity. Like we had no idea. And anyway, he started saying all these things, and it was just crazy. So we became a bit obsessed. Every night when we would go to Kelly's house, he would be there and talking to us. And it got to the point where there was no other spirits coming through apart from him. Occasionally he would make room for a couple of other spirits, and we would chat to them, but it was never as fast, it always left room for doubt. Is this real? You know, but he was the only one that seemed to feel real to us after a while. And even he would start to predict things. Once when we were on the board, he spelled out, Luke is here. And Luke was my boyfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And literally a few seconds after he said that, my boyfriend knocked on the door, and he hadn't even announced that he was coming.
Oh, that's frightening.
And everyone sort of was like, ah! And Edward spelled new car. And it was true because Luke had just got a new car, and he hadn't told any of our friends who were in the room. And when we got in, we told him that Edward had just announced this before he told us. And my boyfriend was very skeptical. He didn't believe it. He was like, all right, fine. What color is the car then? And Edward spelled orange. And Luke laughed and he was like, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. It's not orange. And we went outside and he was wrong. It was a red Mini Cooper. But it was really weird because it was dark outside at the time. And Luke had parked this car under a street lamp and the street lamp was making the car look orange.
Ah, that's interesting.
It was really creepy. So anyway, we started testing him, Edward, because people were still accusing us of pushing it because this guy was, he had such a personality and he was laughing and playing games. And of course, it didn't even feel real to us, but I knew that I wasn't pushing it and I knew Kelly wasn't. Anyway, one time we got our friend Laura to write a word down on a piece of paper. So she went to the other side of the room and she wrote a word down on the paper. And we said to Edward, okay, if you are real, then prove it to us, please, because we've got some cynics in the house. Go over to the corner and spell out whatever word Laura is writing down right now. Right. And we didn't, me and Kelly had our fingers, we were at the on the pointer, we were the other side of the room. And then the board spelled out the word swan, as in the bird, right?
Right.
And yeah, so Laura was like, wrong, wrong again, that's so wrong. And she held out the paper and it wasn't, I can't remember what she wrote, but it wasn't swan. But anyway, Luke, my boyfriend, was next to her and he was just looking like he was freaking out. And he grabbed the piece of paper and he said, that's not the right word, but look what she was leaning on while she was writing that word. And she'd been leaning on a box of swan matches. Like, swan wow. is... yeah. I don't know if it's the same in the US, but in the UK, the Swan is like a really big brand of matches. And she'd been leaning on a massive box of them to write her words. So he was playing. He was just playing with us, right? And anyway, so the conclusion is the reason why I kind of had to stop talking to Edward, because one night it wasn't really that long after we started talking, maybe a couple of weeks, but I had a dream. And in my dream, I was sitting on a bench. And I was eating like sweets. It was so random. It was kind of like a Willy Wonka chocolate factory sort of thing. You know how dreams are. It's really hazy. But I remember that I was sitting on this bench and a big black man came and sat down next to me. And we kind of smiled at each other. And I kind of forgot about this. You know what dreams are like. And the next day we were on the Ouija board again. And Edward was there. And he spelled out, you shouldn't have eaten all that candy. And my friend Kelly was really confused because I hadn't, well, she was like, what's he talking about? And then I remembered my dream and I was absolutely freaked out because I just knew that it had been him in my dream. Because, and anyway, I said to Kelly, I have no idea, but let's ask Edward, what does he look like? And I'd only just finished saying that and he was already spelling out pigment enhanced. And Kelly asked me, what does pigment enhanced mean? And it was basically him telling us that he was black and him confirming that, yes, it was him in my dream. And like I said, I kind of had this feeling. I knew that before he even said it. It was so weird. And also, he was talking about me eating candy and being British. She wouldn't have spelled out the word candy any more than I would. We would say sweets. In England, we eat sweets.
Right.
Right? So it was just so weird. Anyway, I didn't use the Ouija board again after that for a really long time. I just felt like I didn't really need to. That was enough confirmation for me. This guy had actually come into my dream and proved it. Like, I never told Kelly about that dream, and she was the only one whose fingers were on that pointer apart from mine, and I know that I was not pushing that. So I don't know.
So basically, this wasn't a case where you had like this malevolent kind of spirit, but this was more of just someone talking with you.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. I mean, who knows, maybe he was bored, but he was there whenever we, you know, logged on, so to speak. He just wanted to talk to us. And you know, we talked to this guy for a really long time. I can't remember, but he almost became like a friend, and we actually got quite obsessed with it. I'm actually glad that I had that dream and it stopped me, because who knows what else I would have conjured up if I'd stayed on it. But it was interesting. Yeah, he was never malevolent. He was just always just a really friendly guy, you know, on the other side, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, Becky, you're on the other side of the ocean, but we're so glad that you took some time to speak with us and be a part of the campfire. Thanks for being a part of that campfire group. I know I notice your retweets and your favorites, so thank you for that, and thank you for joining us today around the campfire.
Thank you so much, Jim. Keep up the good work.
This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Now, before we get to our next great campfire stories, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Harry's.com for supporting the show. In fact, I used their razors this morning. Now, I am so glad I did, because Harry's has fixed a problem that most guys have had, paying too much for overpriced razors. We all know, been through it, we know shaving with a dull blade, well, it isn't fun. We cut, scrape ourselves, and a lot of times because we just don't want to bother with the expense and hassle of getting these old traditional razor blades at stores. They run about $4 a blade, and the average guy who shaves every day, well, he spends hundreds of dollars a year on razors. And when you go to the store to buy them, they're locked away like they're bars of gold, and you have to get this guy with 72 keys on his belt to unlock the thing so he could get some overpriced razors that aren't that great to begin with. Well, again, the company who's fixed that is called Harry's. They make high-quality razors at about half the price of those big brand blades. And in fact, they're so serious about it, they went and bought a factory in Germany to engineer and make their own razors, engineered for sharpness and high performance. And best of all, they ship them for free to your front door. Now, because they make and they ship their own blades, the savings are passed on to you, and they guarantee your satisfaction. I have the Winston set, and the kit was shipped right to my door with all the cool stuff that came in it, a razor handle with a great look and feel, three razor blades, and a choice of either shave cream or foaming shave gel. And they also have the starter Truman set. You can check that out as well. They give me a clean, close, and comfortable shave. I love it, and I'm not going back. I'm a Harry's customer. I love it. I think you will too. So go over to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase with coupon code CAMPFIRE. And I should say, it makes a great gift too. So if, for that guy in your life, if you want to get him something special that he won't forget about, get him Harry's. Now go to harrys.com, that's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, and enter the coupon code CAMPFIRE at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase. Thanks so much, Harry's.
If you love these great ghost stories, please tell a friend about Jim Harold's Campfire today. Now we return to the show.
Next up on the campfire is Mary. She is a member of our Facebook group, the Virtual Campfire Group. She had a story that she shared over there, and I said, hey, Mary, why don't you tell it on the show? And she agreed to. So anybody out there who has told their stories in the group, we'd love for you to come over on this side and share it to the bigger audience over here. And she's been listening from way before we even started the campfire, going back to the early days of the Paranormal Podcast. And I guess this particular story, maybe people of a certain age remember a song, I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, if I remember correctly. Well, this could be I Hate Rock and Roll. Mary, tell us your story. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, it's your reference to I Hate Rock and Roll. That's my dad. He was, even though he was an Elvis fan, he didn't consider him a rock and roll guy, even though he's the king of rock. But he was convinced, this is back in the day and age, MTV was just starting out and everything, and we just got cable. And if he ever came in the room and you had MTV on, he was like, get that off the TV, it's going to break it. And his thoughts about every time he wanted to reference anything with rock and roll, it was always, he would say, it's a bad motorcycle, woo-woo, that kind of thing, you know, yeah, right. Yeah, just nonsensical stuff, but it was always about the motorcycle, bad motorcycle, mean motorcycle, whatever. And never heard that song before, you know, what is that? But he passed away, and it was over 20 years ago. My husband and I were living in Florida, and we'd gotten the news that morning about him passing, so we had to make arrangements to get up to Louisiana. The next day, my husband needed to go and see about getting some things to put on his dress, military uniform, because that's what he was going to wear to the funeral.
Right.
So we took a drive, about a 45-minute drive, up to Eglin Air Force Base from where we lived. And the song, all of a sudden, on the radio, about I mean, motorcycle. Yeah, yeah. And it was just exactly the way he used to sing it. Never heard it before. I mean, I just started laughing and crying all at one time. And my husband's like, what in the world are you, what's the matter with you? I said, this song, have you ever heard this song before? And he goes, no. And I'm like, well, I have, but the only one I've ever heard sing it is my dad.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, that's too much, you know? But, it just, you know, I know there's, tried to Google it, see if I could find that song somewhere, the lyrics, whatever, you know how you do, just
sure.
to figure out what the name of the song is. And the only one that ever comes up is that song, Alley Oop.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah, I remember that song.
But that's a totally different tune that he was singing it to, not the same words, a lot slower, and really, I doubt he would have considered that rock and roll anyways, because it was more, you know, 1950s kind of Alley Oop.
Right.
And it just mentions a mean motor scooter.
I'll tell you, you know, it's one of those things where I believe they get their messages across, and there's different ways they do it. It's not always right in front of your face with a full body apparition. People have listened long enough. Know I have my own story that's not entirely dissimilar to that. I think that they find their ways to get their message through. And sometimes it's something as simple as a song.
It most definitely is. And he certainly got my attention that night.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for joining us on the campfire and telling this very poignant story. We certainly appreciate it.
Alrighty. Thanks for calling, Jim.
We have a return caller. He's been on the program before. Ray from my home state, Ohio, is calling in, and he has one of the scariest stories in the sense of when it happened. You know, those childhood stories sometimes can be the ones that stick with you the most. This goes back to fifth grade for Ray, and he's going to tell us what happened. Ray, welcome to the program, and please tell us your campfire story.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I'd like to thank you for having me back again. And I just want to apologize because I think my first story that I told you, I was so nervous just recounting it, the memories and things. I know I listened to myself in the playback, and I thought, my gosh, I sounded like I was crazy or something.
No.
Couldn't get it all out. So.
You were fine. You were fine.
But no, I think this time it's going to be a little less because this was not traumatic, and I don't want to say that I have any idea of what this actually was or you know what it was about. But it was back when I was in grade school in fifth grade, and where I lived at, I lived in East Liverpool, Ohio, which is right on the panhandle of West Virginia, Pennsylvania, right on the Ohio River.
Right.
So, like, right before you leave Ohio, we're the last ones out if you're on the southern part of the river. And I was going to East Elementary School. And there was no signs or indications of anything being different when we were going to school. You know, we got on the bus, and everybody's talking and doing their stuff. And we get to school. We sit down, and classes were kind of subdued. And I don't know how to describe it other than we weren't really doing a lot in class, and we was kind of, it was almost like pedaling around, just kind of waiting for something to go over the, you know, the school to start. And I can remember our principal, Mrs. Kelly, come on the loudspeaker, and she said that we were going to be dismissing classes by the grades, and we'd be following our teachers outside. And then we would be told what to do. And they started with the first graders, and they went room by room, and they went down grade by grade. So being in the fifth grade, we were kind of waiting for our turn to go outside. And what was really bizarre about this thing was, in retrospect, any time that our school was going to do something where we would be outside, like we would have like fairs and things like that outside the school
right. Sometimes.
They would say, like, you know, well, tomorrow is going to be a day where we're going to be running around outside. Please don't dress your kids in, you know, really good clothes. Put them in something appropriate and things like that. And we had not gotten any kind of message or any kind of notes or anything prior to that day. And I can remember that very specifically because I had, like, on a pair of dress clothes that afternoon. And it was just kind of weird. I was like, man, I'm going to get my clothes all dirty, and then my mom's going to be really mad at me. So that was like the first indication that it was like an abnormal thing. And it was just really bizarre. I can remember my teacher, Mrs. Humphreys, just sitting there waiting for the loudspeaker to come on and to dismiss our class. And when they did, she just kind of got up. Everybody stood up, and we just followed her out. And we're all kind of like, what's going on? Where are we going? And she just said, you'll see when you get outside. So we went down the stairs and into our cafeteria. Now, the really bizarre thing is our cafeteria was one of those ones where we also had our gymnasium there. So all of our tables in the cafeteria would be like in the walls. You'd pull them out, and then when you were done, you'd pick them back up and slot them back into the wall. So the cafeteria, was just a simple place. But the time we went down there, it should have been getting ready for, like, you know, like it would have things ready for lunch, because we only had like certain classes in the morning for gym only on certain days. So there should have been tables out. And I can remember going into the cafeteria, and there was nobody in the cafeteria making food or cooking or anything. And the entire room was full. There were kids, and what you would do is you would step up to a table, and they would ask you who you were, what class you were in, what grade, so on and so forth, and then you'd move down the line and ask you different questions, like where do you live and this sort of thing. And by the time you got to the end of the room, you would go outside, and we met, and it was just like, I can't remember precisely what they were wearing. I almost want to say it was lab coats, or they were dressed all in white, and I can't recall whether it was one or the other. And that's why, like, to this day, it's really strange to me, because I can't remember that little detail, but it was very bright, and I mean, like, bizarrely bright outside. The sun normally would not shine, like, it was like an intense brightness. But we went outside, and we had somebody else, like, our teachers left. Like, we didn't see our teachers after we went out that room at all. We went out, and one person took us over to part of the field, because the outside doors would lead into a nice big field, and that's where, like, the kids would practice their football or whatever they were doing for the season, cheerleading sometimes or whatever. So we went out, and one person took us, and they started making us, you know, run laps and, you know, rolls and flips and, you know, just kind of like physical things. And we did that for a little while, and then we went into, like, a tent they had set up, where they were also doing things where they would say, can you put this puzzle together? How, you know, and then you'd put it together, and they would say, okay, you did that one really good. Can you do this? And can you figure this out? And this, it was like just this really bizarre series of exercises. And I can remember, like, going through the whole thing, and I thought, they're testing us. This is like, these are tests. And I looked over, and I was looking at this woman, and I said, you know, can you tell me how we're doing? Because I had been, like, really killing it, like, in the physical stuff outside. I was, like, beating everybody in the foot race. And I was like, yeah, I mean, even my dress clothes, I'm still running really great, you know, and, you know, doing my rolls and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I did really good out there, and I'm really knocking out of the park, like, these put this together or figure this out or this stuff. And I said, how are we doing on these tests? And the woman looked at me, and she got this really weird smile on her face, and she said, test. And I said, but what you're doing is you're testing us, right? You're saying how good we can do this or that. And she just kind of gave me like a sideward glance, and she said, just wait here for a minute. And so I waited, and another guy came over, and like I said, he was dressed in white, and he had me go with him, and we went into another little thing outside. Now, the tent wasn't like an open tent. It was, you know, like a circus tent almost, where you would have the sides down, so there was like no exterior view. You couldn't drive by and see people standing under the tent. It was like an interior thing.
Right.
And there were a couple kids in there already there ahead of me, and he said to sit down. I sat down. He said, well, I'm going to draw some blood. We want to test a couple other things from you now. And I thought, well, that's really weird. I don't want to have my blood taken. But and then it was no big deal, because I was a kid that, like, if I went to the dentist and was getting my teeth drilled, I was like, okay, great. You know, I'm really into this stuff, you know. So and I have no fear of needles. So I was like, well, take my blood if you need it. And the other kids had the same thing. And we were just, like, just kind of sitting there. No one was talking to each other. And that was the other, like, I can remember my friends being there outside and doing things. And we weren't, like, saying, hey, man, I can beat you in this race, or hey, I can do this or that. We were just kind of just focused on what we were told to do. And that was, like, an indicator that this was, like, a weird day. And after we got all done, like, they said, thank you. You're going to go back to your rooms now. We all went back in, and the thing is that really kind of struck me as the day being odd was we didn't eat in the cafeteria. We all ate outside, and, you know, there was no reason for us to ever eat outside under the tents or whatever. We would have went back into the cafeteria, but the cafeteria was never used. Like, it was totally a non-functional thing that day. So we all went back to our rooms, and we just kind of waited there until the buses came, and then they dismissed us, and they said, you know, the walkers go, and then the bus drivers, you know, the busers are out there. You go out to catch your bus. And I can remember the weirdest part of the day was nobody on the bus talked on the way home. It was like dead silence. And I was thinking, well, this is just really weird. Everybody's really quiet. And I don't know why I was like catching on that things were awry. I can't tell you why. But I got home and I didn't say a word to my parents because it was just like, well, that was just what we were supposed to do that day.
Right.
And so the next day I get up and we go to school and I'm going like most of the day through the day. And I can remember looking over and I said to Mrs. Humphreys, I said, well, how did we do on our test yesterday? And she looked at me kind of weird. She says, what tests do we do? And I said, well, we went outside and we did the running and the test in the tents and things like that. And I said, you know, when do we find out how well we did? And she said, we never went outside yesterday. And I said, I said, no, we did. We went outside and there were the people in the white and this and that. And she said, no, Ray, you know, we were here all day yesterday and everybody's looking at me going, we were here. And I said, no, we weren't because I still had the needle mark in my arm where, you know, I had blood drawn. So I knew that I hadn't hallucinated the whole day, but nobody else remembered that day at all. And it was just one of those things where I thought about it and I was like, where did that day go or what happened that no one remembered this?
That is
and I don't
so want to
say it was like, you know, people would say, well, this is an alien thing or governmental thing. I don't know what it was. But I remember it so distinctly, except for I can't remember exactly like the people, you know, like I can't remember exactly what they were wearing and I can't remember exactly how they looked. But I even want to say they were wearing sunglasses because it was so bright, but I can't even tell you that's the fact. But I remember everything else that we were doing, like, you know, the races and, you know, the puzzles that we had to put together was kind of like almost like Rubik's Cube kind of stuff. And I remember all of that, but I can't tell you, you know, what the people were doing or why they were there or any of that stuff. And no one else remembered it. It just always bothered me to this day that, you know, no one could recall what I was talking about. Now, I know I didn't dream about it. Like I said, I still had a needle mark on my arm from where they had drawn blood.
Right.
So, you know, it was just one of those weird days that I just can't explain what happened.
That really is a weird day. And that's one of the strangest, most kind of bizarre X-File-ish type stories we've ever heard on the story or show. And I guess that's just something that sticks with you and you always kind of wonder what in the world happened.
No, absolutely.
Well, yeah, Ray, you've got a head scratcher. I'd love to see if anybody's got any ideas there. In a new place that we can share some of those ideas. And Ray, we haven't even talked about this. I don't know if you're familiar. We have a new Facebook group.
Oh, yes,
our virtual campfire group. So maybe somebody can chime in over there and say, hey, I heard Ray's story, and here's my theory. If you'd be up for that, Ray, what do you think?
Absolutely. I would love to hear any ideas because no one ever spoke about it afterwards. It was just kind of like a forgotten event, almost like the lost day at school or something, you know. I mean, I know the teachers were there. I know the principal was there, you know, all that, and no one, you know, recalled anything. And so if anybody has an idea of what happened, I would be really happy to hear what, you know, what their thoughts are.
You've given us something to think about, Ray. Thank you for joining us today on the campfire.
Absolutely, Jim. Love the show. Thank you.
Dino is calling in tonight from the Chicago area. He had found the show just by Googling and found us and has been listening for a couple of years, and we're so appreciative. And he has quite a story for us tonight. So, Dino, welcome to the program, and please tell us what happened.
The time it was around probably the early 90s, 91 or so. I was working at a grocery store, and it was right, this is important to the story, it was right before Thanksgiving. So,
okay.
Grocery store was very packed, everybody was getting ready for Thanksgiving. I had an aunt, a great aunt, who was like a cousin to my grandfather, I think. And she had dementia, and she was in hospice care on south side of Chicago.
Okay.
Grocery store was on the north side of Chicago. So we're talking 40, 45 miles, you know, and there's, it's a long distance.
Sure.
Right? So one day, the day before Thanksgiving, I was walking through doing some kind of task that they had me doing, and I look and I turn around, and I saw my aunt, and she sort of looked very vivid color. Like, and then I thought, okay, how did she get here? you know, why would they let a little woman with dementia out to come? Why would she be here?
Right.
And I started approaching her, and a crowd sort of walked in front, and she was gone. So a little while later, I get on break, I grab my cell phone, call my mother, and say, well, Ma, did somebody go pick Aunt so-and-so up and bring her for Thanksgiving? Because I thought that was a nice thing to do, whatever, right?
Sure.
And my mother said, you know, I just got a phone call about an hour ago, and she passed.
Huh. Wow.
And I was like, no, because I to this day, and this is decades later, I swear on everything, I saw her. And she turned around the corner into a crowd and gone.
So I guess the question would be, do you think that she was saying goodbye?
I believe so. I believe so. But she smiled at me and then just sort of gone.
And I'm assuming you guys had even though it was a great aunt, you had a relationship with her, I assume.
Oh yeah. She used to, all of us, there's a lot of cousins. So she used to babysit us all the time.
Wow. What a great story. What a great story. And I guess it was kind of nice to, if you were going to see her one last time, see her vibrant, happy and smiling.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. That is neat. Well, that's a short but sweet story. I love that, Dino. I really do. I think that our loved ones have a way, as we said in a previous call tonight, have a way of getting messages to us. And certainly it sounds like your aunt did that. We thank you so much for sharing this story on the show tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Anthony's on the line. He found us on TuneIn Radio, that great app. He's calling from the city of the Golden Gate, San Francisco, California, and he's a self-described skeptic, but there is this one story he has that I guess has made him think twice. Anthony, welcome to the program and tell us what happened.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll get right to it. It's not a hard story to tell. I was working in a very old saloon in a very small town in northeastern Utah about 5 years ago, and upon being hired, I was basically realized very quickly that everybody that worked there was utterly convinced that this place was haunted. And I heard lots of stories, I'm assuming we all do, stories from things being displaced in the mantle cabinet to apparitions actually playing pool at the billiards table to the jukebox turning on. But nobody seemed to be afraid of these ghosts. Nobody seemed to be under the impression that it was an evil spirit of any kind. But like everything else, like you said, I'm a skeptic, so I took everything with a grain of salt and kind of just brushed it to the side. And then one night, I was closing the bar with one other young lady who was my bar back. It was me, her, and we had let two patrons, basically stay after hours, and we're serving it. They had heavy pockets, so we were just that's something that happens on occasion, and not too proud to say, but it was what it was. So we're sitting there. I'm talking with these guests. Talia is behind the bar washing some dishes, and out of absolutely nowhere, I placed these three bar chairs each, on these three round top tables that are in the bar area that are basically, they're not at the bar, but they're part of the bar. So it's the seating area of the bar, but there are these tall 4 foot round top tables. And as I'm talking to these gentlemen, they're all three of the chairs from the nearest round top table decide to, on their own, slowly slide to the outside of the table and fall off onto the ground.
Oh, my.
In unison, yeah. So it happened at the exact same time. So I was pretty freaked out immediately. I kind of was probably the only one that actually saw those chairs go, and I could just get a sense that somebody pushed those chairs off, and I just had, there was no doubt in my mind. And so that was really, it was really an uneasy feeling at first. And so I'm thinking, okay, that was awesome. You know, I've been waiting my whole life to see something obviously supernatural. And I just did. I just saw these chairs fall off this table. And these gentlemen, they saw it. We all experienced it. One of them kind of made a joke, and we continue on about our night. They leave, and you know, it's just me and the young lady in the bar. So I'm directly in front of a different table this time, facing this table, and I'm washing dishes, and I look up, and I much more vividly than the first time see, and this is a different table now, all three chairs slowly slide to the outside of this table and fall onto the ground.
Oh my.
In unison.
Oh my. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember spending the next 15 minutes just trying to think, how in the realm of physics did this happen? How did this happen? You know, I'm thinking, okay, maybe the table turned one way or the other, or there was a draft or something, but there's no explanation. These chairs are heavy, heavy chairs, 20, 25 pounds a piece. There's no way that all three of these chairs are going to just slide to the outside of this table and fall off on their own. And so that was basically what happened. That was the end of the experience for that evening. You know, we were a little freaked out. She talked me into, leaving the bar a little early that night. So, we did. And, but you know, like I said, we were very much in agreement that whatever it was not, at least we didn't feel like it was a bad presence. We didn't feel unsafe in this bar, but we felt like there was somebody messing with us. So the next day I immediately, you know, I come to the bar. I'm not even working. I just come to the bar about noon just to tell my story, you know, because I've heard all of these other stories of this place being haunted and things moving around. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Right.
Well, I go to the bar and I talk to the bar manager and I tell her a story and she kind of just goes white. And she goes, you know, it's actually a previous owner of this bar. She goes, he's dead, by the way. She goes, his biggest pet peeve was that we placed these bar chairs right side up on these round top tables, not upside down. Well, I had placed those bar chairs upside down that evening.
Oh.
And I mean, she went white and I just go, that's what happened. There we go. I didn't do it right. I didn't do it the way it was supposed to be done. And whoever this person was letting me know, hey, this is how I like things done. And, like I said, I'm a skeptic. I'm one of these guys. I don't really believe in the supernatural. I believe that there's just all unexplainable things that we don't have words for yet, but not necessarily supernatural, you know? So it was really interesting and I never got scared. And I closed the bar many a time on my own after that. And I always abided by the right side up rule and never again experienced anything of note in that bar.
That is quite a story. That is quite a story. So basically, you did something he didn't like, and he let you know about it.
And he let me know about it. I mean, and like I said, I'm not sure if somebody else would have been more scared than I was. I really wasn't that terrified of what was going on, but it definitely was one of those things. I remember sending you in the email that I've seen a lot of things. You know, I've seen right. A lot of things I can't explain, but that was the one so obvious that it just, there is no explanation besides the one that I've convinced myself of, which is there was an entity in that bar with us that night, and that's what he was trying to tell us.
Sounds reasonable to me. Anthony, thank you for listening and for sharing your story on the campfire.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed this campfire as much as I did. I'm excited. There's a lot going on at the Spooky Studio, as I said. Check out that Facebook group. Share your stories there and on the Campfire program as well. Please sign up for that. We've got the book coming out in about another week, week and a half, and the t-shirts within the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for all of that fun. We will talk to you next time on the Campfire. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.